This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Wednesday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And it is May 6th, so tick-tock. What's our countdown, Hunter? What's our countdown?
Election. Days, 2 weeks from yesterday.
Lucky number 13. All right. Well, what a perfect day then to be joining us on lucky number 13 is candidate for Award 2, Manny Martinez. How are you, Manny?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back. Always fun to be on your show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we love having you on, too. We kind of get an update on you on how the campaign's going, what folks can do. You've been out there. I see you all over social media. I'm assuming you're out there knocking on doors. Give us an update. How's it been going?
It's been going great. The social media has been really good. The response has been fascinating. We get a lot of interaction in our social media.
Yes.
we have some dedicated volunteers that have been helping with the door knocking and phone calls. And the response that I get and the response that my volunteers get at the doors is overwhelmingly positive. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's really interesting about my campaign is that I think that we have the most broad bipartisan support. We not only have a lot of conservatives and independents that are supporting us because I'm very pro-law enforcement. We have the endorsements of the police union and fire union. Mm-hmm. I talk about enforcing the camping ban, and I want to get more into that, the nuance of that. Mm-hmm. But okay. I get a lot of support from conservatives and independents, but we also get a lot of support from Democrats and progressives too, which has my opposition very rattled at the moment.
You know, again, these are nonpartisan races. We mm-hmm. know that. But you almost kind of want to go wink, wink, nudge, nudge, because they, you know, you kind of know where everybody stands on them. And all, like I always say, look at who's endorsing them and look at who's giving them money. And that tells the tale. Again, I do a dive out on Orstar weekly. Mm-hmm. I'm out there weekly just to check and see what's going on.
Well, with 13 days left, it might become more of a daily thing for you. Come on.
It might. But, you know, it's interesting that you say, because your main issue is the homelessness crisis in the Salem area. And it gets a lot of national attention. You've got video guys coming in, and Wallace Marine Park, I believe, is the worst one in the state of Oregon. Mm-hmm. And that gets a lot of national attention. It gets a lot of local attention. Everybody knows this is a problem.
Right. And I say all the time that this should not be a left versus right issue. This is
correct.
This affects everyone in the city.
It's quality of life. Yeah.
But the opportunity here is that this can be a unifying issue. Mm-hmm. There's a very, very small group, a very small minority that has had a stranglehold on this conversation for many, many years. But when you start to have the conversation with people, you'll see that there is a ton of agreement. I mean, I've met with county commissioners and elected officials and also the leaders of several different nonprofits. I don't like to name names because the amount you've seen some of the abuse I get online,
yeah,
and I can take it, but I don't want to subject anyone else to it. But I can say that I've met with most of the key players in this arena, people that are all over the political spectrum. And when you have the honest eye-to-eye conversation with them, you can really find a large amount of agreement. It's just that everyone is talking past each other online. The city council, you've had people just showing up and shaming people into silence and bullying people into silence. Yeah. And that has to stop. I'm really happy about the fact that people have come to me and said, your campaign has changed the conversation in this city about the homelessness emergency. I think that we've already accomplished something pretty extraordinary about just how people are talking about this, including a lot of the candidates that at first were not wanting to talk about this a whole lot. Now they've kind of been forced into talking about it quite a bit and start to move the conversation away from just empty lectures about kindness and compassion to now,
yeah,
how are we going to solve this problem? I'm sick of the lectures. No more lectures about kindness and compassion without any kind of real plan to solve the problem. So when I talk about it in this way, it's very appealing to people. And like I said, with a lot of conservatives and independents, they're looking forward to the order and the cleanliness of what we're talking about. But when it comes to people who are more progressive or Democrat, like they... most of them are genuinely wanting to help the people out on the street. And because,
yeah,
I have my recovery background and the amount that I've learned over the last 8 or 9 months, I'm able to speak to them in a way that lets them understand that I am genuinely compassionate and empathetic to the people that are suffering on our streets, but also being able to articulate the reality that there has to be an element of accountability when it comes to solving this crisis. And I always give the caveat, you know, we have the single mom escaping her abuser, you have the increasing amount of elderly people that just have nowhere else to go. You do have the guy who just had some kind of financial hardship that finds himself out on the street. And we all want to be able to help that person. The key question is this, and this is what I've boiled it all down to, and I was saying this at the debate at the convention center, and this is what I always ask everyone in every single conversation, no matter what their political affiliation is, and that is this, the key question, which is, if we are to provide all of the services and shelters and everything that is needed, what do you do with the people that refuse to cooperate? That's what it comes down to.
So what are the answers you get?
Well, that always sparks the conversation about, obviously, there needs to be some element of law enforcement when it comes to people that refuse to cooperate with the laws. And that is the question that, when I talk to some of my more progressive and left-leaning friends, that's where you can help them to see the reality of the situation and also bring in the stories of people like myself and other people in recovery, where sometimes you have to have that tougher approach in order to accelerate the process of hitting bottom, let's say. I mean, I've sat in many, many recovery meetings where people give gratitude to the criminal justice system for intervening and getting them to stop the kind of destructive behaviors that they were engaged in and compelling them into some kind of recovery process. Now, again, I'm not saying that you just go around and just start arresting everyone. That's what the most toxic part of my opposition will take away from this. I'm talking about law enforcement being the last resort, but it has to be on the table. And when you talk about it honestly this way, like, even a lot of people that are Democrats and progressives, they'll say, well, yeah, of course. I mean, we don't want people committing crimes. I'm like, okay. You're at the table now. Now we can actually start to talk about how we can solve this, assuming that we are willing to make the proper investments in order to get people what they need in order to get off the street. But we need them to cooperate in the process.
And my guess is that these are conversations that are happening in person, face to face. They're not something that's happening behind a keyboard. And I, like I said, and I think that's really good, because I've said this many times, we always have a lot more in common than we think we do, especially when you're standing there face to face and you're forging personal relationships and you're forging connections. That doesn't happen on social media. And your stuff does get spicy, but I've noticed a shift tone in that. There's a couple of individuals that comment a lot, but they're not nasty about it. But they do push back. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, with people challenging you on some of your assertions.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with being challenged as far as long as it's coming in good faith. But I don't really feel the need to get involved in a back and forth with someone who is just starting off with a big pile of lies and personal attacks.
No, there's no point to that.
No, and I know if you've ever tried to argue with people on Facebook, you know that whatever that first question is just going to lead to a series of other questions. If it's someone who's operating in bad faith, they're just going to keep asking something until they have something that they can screenshot and use against you.
It's a tactic you can spot a mile away.
Of course.
Now. I mean, it's really obvious now.
But I love having the face-to-face conversations because then we have to treat each other like human beings and actually hear each other. So I haven't had really any bad interactions with people face-to-face, even people that are in strong disagreement, even people that after the conversation, they're still in disagreement, but we can say, hey, you know, we happen to disagree. I won't be earning your vote, but I appreciate the polite conversation and I'll be on my way. So, yeah, the social media is unbelievably toxic.
It is. And again, it's just it's a slice of it. It's not the real world. And I think, you know, I know those of us that operate in that world, you have to be really careful not to stay within the confines of that bubble, because I see too many, especially a lot of candidates that do stay in the confines of that bubble. And when you get into the real world, it's vastly different. So my question then, if you've had a really good interaction with a progressive or a Democrat, or even, you know, somebody on the right who may not agree with all of you, do they understand the problem, but then they're still going to vote differently? Why do you think that is, if they say that they agree with you, they say it's a problem, but they're still not going to vote to maybe take a different approach to fix it?
I think a lot of it has to do with just politics having become a team sport, and no matter what, they will have an idea of what their team is, and they have to vote for the candidate that is on their team. I'm really doing my
heavy sigh.
I'm doing my best to play it down the middle. I'm a non-affiliated voter.
Right.
And I make it a point in my posting and when I speak, is like, I don't care if you voted for Kamala Harris, I don't care if you voted for Donald Trump, I don't care if you wrote in Bernie Sanders. I'm only interested in one thing, which is solving the problem. Dr. Phil has a great line that says, I'm not looking to win arguments, I'm looking to solve problems. That's my thinking when it comes to politics. I want to figure out how to solve this problem. And guess what? A lot of the leaders of nonprofits and a lot of people in that space are going to be more left-leaning people.
Right.
And I've had conversations with them, and they have a lot of knowledge, and I look forward to being able to work with them. And then when I have the conversation about accountability, they're in agreement about it. It's just that I think the conversation has become so toxic that in their minds, when they hear accountability, they immediately jump to like, oh, you want to arrest all the homeless people, which is not true. Like everyone on both sides has had a proper amount of brainwashing into certain words triggering them into thinking like the worst possible interpretation of what you're saying. So that's why the long in-person face-to-face conversations are so important.
Yeah. So again, go ahead, Hunter.
Oh, no, I just sit here and I go, that whole concept is so physically impossible.
Right.
We already have a problem with our jail system of releasing inmates early because they don't have enough beds for everybody. If you were to go and sweep the homeless scenario into a prison in this area, you would literally be releasing everyone worse out onto the streets to do it.
It's absurd. I've never heard any serious person suggest it. It's too expensive to do, even if you wanted to do it, which I don't. But again, it's just a political tactic. This has all become sport, you know? So one of the questions I end up asking certain individuals is like, are you actually interested in solving this problem? I've had to zoom out that far to ask that question. Like, are you actually interested in this? Because you don't seem to be hearing what I'm saying. You don't seem to be interested in even trying to hear what I'm saying. I put out that 8-step plan, which is a long document with a lot of nuance to it. And you still have people saying like, oh, he just wants to criminalize homelessness. And in reality, I actually am talking about putting so much resources into the situation that a lot of conservatives are like, hey, you're wanting to spend too much.
I've seen that.
So I'm like equally getting support from both sides and equally pissing off both sides. And that makes me feel like I'm on the right track, honestly.
I think so. Well, and that's the thing. I'm sitting here going, people that have been through alcohol, drug recovery, people that have gotten themselves up off the homeless, 99% of the ones I've had conversations with, even juvenile criminal offenders, a stay, even an overnight stay in a holding cell, has changed their outlook on things and decided, I need something different, something better in my life.
People say all the time, you can't force someone into sobriety. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Every time someone is arrested for DUI, you force them into sobriety, even if it's for a couple of days. Now, the difference is you can't force someone into long-term sobriety. Mm-hmm. That's true. But when if someone is committing a crime that's due to their drug addiction and they are arrested, even if it's for that 24 or 48 hours or whatever it is, you have opened a door for them to be able to think clearly to hopefully make that decision. So this idea that you can't force someone into sobriety, it's literally happened millions of times. Mm-hmm. And it's often been the case that that's what starts the process for the person to turn their lives around. Now, again, I will say I'm not talking about that as a solution for all of the people that are experiencing homelessness. You have a variety of different reasons that people are out there, and many of them will accept the help that is offered and cooperate, and that's beautiful, and we want to do that. I'm specifically asking the question, the key question, which is, what do you do with people that even when you offer them the help, they still refuse and then continue to break the law in the form of illegal public camping? Like, is illegal public camping against the law or not? You know, as far as I know, it's against the law, but we're just not enforcing it. So we either need to stop saying that we either need to make it legal or enforce it as an illegal thing. So
I want to dig a little bit more. Do you have time to stay for one more segment, Manny?
Sure.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a break here. We've run a little bit long and dig in a little bit more on that. And then some of the other issues that are facing the city of Salem that you would be dealing with as a counselor as well. Again, we're talking with Manny Martinez. He's running for Salem City Council Ward 2. And you're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Salem Clinic Urgent Care and Color Tile of Salem.
All right, we're wrapping up our conversation today with Ward 2 candidate for Salem City Council, Manny Martinez. So, Manny, we were talking before the break, you know, camping. I always think it's weird when I read an article and they refer to people that are, you know, living, existing in Wallace Marina as campers. that always just, I'm like, well, I'm a camper when I go camp. So, again, words matter, being able to speak clearly about that. But like you said, is it legal or is it illegal? Where's the law fall on that? And do we follow the law or not?
Yeah, and what gives you, does being unsheltered give you a free pass to break the law? And that's a question.
To some, I guess it does.
To some, I guess it does. And they will respond with like, well, they need to have somewhere to go. And I say that's fair. That which is why the for my 8-step plan, the number two thing is to make shelter number one priority. I want to make sure that we have somewhere for everyone to go. And then we can enforce a camping ban, because when people ask, do they have somewhere to go? The answer is yes, a resounding yes. And we want to have an abundance of shelter so that managed camping, unmanaged camping is a thing of the past. And guess what? Even the leaders of these nonprofit groups, they're in agreement about this. They are largely in agreement with me about this issue. The unmanaged camping is bad for everyone involved. And it's just a very, very frustrating conversation. If you look outside of the Gilbert House right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's the worst that I've seen it.
I drove by it. Yeah, I drove by it.
And I did a tour of the Gilbert House recently.
Yeah.
And I mean, you go in there, that's a place for young children to be playing and learning. It's like this wonderful place with all these little kids. And you look out the window and all you see is this illegal camping and all the behaviors associated with it. And I'm thinking to myself, these little kids are growing up at the most, at the youngest stage of their life, thinking that this is acceptable and normal. The employees are having to start their day cleaning up, you know, human feces and needles and everything else outside of this place that's meant for little kids. Like that situation outside of Gilbert House actually pisses me off even more than Wallace Marine Park. Mm-hmm. And Wallace Marine Park makes me angry because there is the level of suffering and anguish that's happening in there that is unacceptable. And you hear the stories about the kind of things that happen in there. I mean, we're talking really, really dark stuff.
Yeah.
And, but the Gilbert House one is like even worse in a sense, because it's just like the fact that it's surrounding this place that's meant for little kids is just so unacceptable. And I saw a woman who made a post about it on social media, and she was pretty kind and compassionate about it too. She was just voicing her concern, and you look in the comment section, she's just being completely brutalized by people saying that she's this horrible person. How dare you? And it's just like, man, like this, I can't stand the nature of this conversation when it comes to this issue. And it's part of what really motivates me is like the level of bullying and shaming that happens to anyone that dares to voice their concerns on it.
We talked about this. There was a post that I saw a few weeks ago, and Hunter and I talked about it. This woman made it. She was at the park down at Riverfront Park, and there was an individual. Her gut told her, and we're women, I guess we're being trained not to trust our guts anymore, but her gut said, I don't trust this guy. He makes me a little nervous. And so she thought she was doing a nice thing by letting other parents know. She was excoriated to the point where she finally had to take it down. And that's where it comes back to. If we can't even have a conversation, if a well-meaning mom can't say, maybe keep an eye on this guy. You got all well, maybe he had a bad child. All this stuff that had nothing to do with the fact that this guy made her nervous and he was watching kids. And it's like the behavior at the moment was not okay. So I don't know. Do you get that as well, where you have to deal with all of this backstory that doesn't necessarily, I don't know how you deal with that. We all have backstories, but.
The situation is frustrating. The thing that I just keep really leaning into is that when I have the face-to-face conversations, especially with the people who are on the front lines of this thing, with people from all different parts of the political spectrum, I'm not talking about politicians though, but I'm talking about people that are actually doing the real work, you can find 90 to 95% common ground on this stuff. You know, there's a discussion about like how much, what percentage of our resources need to go into this, but everyone involved, including some of the top people in the nonprofit area that are heralded by the same people that do the bullying online, will cite these individuals. But guess what? They talk about accountability. They recognize that that's part of the equation. So we will need to have someone in city council that can bring all of the key people in there at the same time to testify on camera, so that we can finally destroy the narratives that have been controlling this for year after year after year. I mean, this is as crazy as it sounds. Like, I really think that the problem that we have at this point is purely just about communication and narrative, and just a very, very small group of radical people who have successfully bullied and shamed us all into silence. Yeah. But I think they're about to finally lose the argument on this.
Yeah, and that's sort of been the status quo for a very, very long time. We're almost out of time with you, Manny. Real quick, I mean, we got, like we said, 13 days. Anything else you want to make sure that voters, listeners know about you and your campaign?
Well, we've got 13 days. Mannyforsalem.com is my website. There's still time to make contributions, financial contributions. You can follow me on social media, share my posts, get the word out there. Ward 2 has been seen as like the biggest hill to climb, the most difficult ward to win. If we win, it'll send shockwaves through the system. It'll be a big signal to the city that the people of Salem are ready for bold action to finally solve the homelessness emergency. I'm not talking about trimming the edges. I'm talking about solving this problem once and for all.
Well, we're glad you're out there talking about it, sort of changing up the narrative. We're gonna take a break for the bottom of the hour news. I feel the music coming. Manny, always great. Good luck out there on the campaign trail, and we'll see what happens in 13 days.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, everybody. We're gonna take that break for the bottom of the hour news. Come right back on the other side.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
All righty, welcome back, everybody. Okay, we're not going to spend too much time on this. This hit. I got a number of messages from friends last night. A friend who actually went to the event in question. This is a story from the Statesman Journal, and the Salem Reporter reported this. First of all, caveat, don't think this necessarily was that newsworthy, but okay. Salem's Chicha Brewing said two Republicans did not have approval to host an event at the location. The two candidates blamed a miscommunication. Now, Hunter, you first of all, most people read headlines, so they stop there. How is this framed?
This is framed to put a black eye onto particularly the Ed Deal for Governor campaign, and just the way it's worded, because you actually look into this any farther, and one, there's not a campaign group out there that is not going to forewarn a restaurant. This makes it sound like this is a group of people that are just going to come over and take over the restaurant, and are putting it out on social media that this is where they're going to be, so you better show up. And I just go, but even reading the own articles, that's not the way it was.
Yeah, because initially I was hearing that they didn't let anybody know. And when I first heard that, I'm like, whoa, that's a big mistake. But then as things started to flesh out as the night went on, and I was getting more messages from people and people were chatting, I had a friend who ended up going. He went to the restaurant. And first of all, this restaurant, this brewing company, I love them. They're great. I don't think they did anything wrong here. I think I don't think the campaign did anything wrong here. I think, again, this is a bit of a, we can thank our local media for kind of, you know, whipping things up a little bit here. I do want to read from the article from the Statesman Journal, because the Deal campaign, again, said that the situation was a misunderstanding. The campaign had been in touch with Chicha since it began planning the event on April 23rd, and Deal said staff had been clear that the reservation was for, quote, Ed Deal for Oregon. What happened, it sounds like, is the business was pressured from outside activists, emphasis on that word, mine, Deal said and claimed other events at nearby breweries had gone on without an issue. And I know that is true. He has lots of breweries he holds events. Quote, unfortunately, due to outside pressure from an anonymous source making blatantly false and offensive claims about the attendees being Nazis, the management decided to cancel our reservation, added Deal's campaign deputy campaign manager John Hollis in an email. Quote, it's unfortunate that we completely understand the pressure that Chicha was put under and respect their decision. End of story. That's it. Let's move on, frankly, because I think the restaurant, I don't think the brewing company did any wrong. I think when you're a business like that and you're running a tight margin, you start getting that kind of stuff coming at you. It's scary. It's not fun. So I just, the whole thing, it's very frustrating.
Well, that's the frustrating part, is that you have a group of activists, and I will put the emphasis on the word as well, because they're really not activists. They're pretty much, you know, kind of local terrorists that are going to put pressure on local businesses simply because they're willing to serve a group of people that they might not politically align with. I just sit here and go, the fact that we are letting these activists make decisions on how businesses are run and how our community goes.
Yeah.
If they're so dedicated, why aren't they running for an office right now? That would be the big question.
Well, I can bet the candidates they're backing. You know, unfortunately, the losers in this are the restaurant and the campaign, because it was unnecessary. It didn't need to happen. My understanding on my friend who did end up going, he said he did go in. He was met with some rudeness. But again, I don't know that was there. There's a lot of pressure. If you've been on the receiving end of the fire hose of hate, you're maybe not in a great mood when you're trying to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So I've got grace for this restaurant. I really do. And again, I've been there. I've enjoyed their food and their, I think I had a cider there with that. It was just out of this world. And so I think I feel bad for both the campaign and for both the restaurant. I wish these people that do this, that aim the fire hose at hate, would just knock it off. I'm sick of them. Mm-hmm. I'm just sick of them. They do nothing good for the community.
No. And that's what I mean, is why if they're so dedicated to making a difference, they could be running for a public office right now. But they're not. Instead, they hide behind their keyboards. They hide behind phone calls. And they bully people into submission. And as long as we as a society are allowing this kind of thing to go on, it makes it more difficult for change. It makes it more difficult to clean up the homeless problem. It makes it more difficult for neighbors to get along when you could be targeted for any reason at any point by some activist group.
Yeah, yeah. So really, shame on the people that, frankly, that called the restaurant, because, you know, the other side of it, a lot of people, I was commenting on different things. It's like, why not? This would have been a great chance to hear from all sides. Like Manny was saying, you're talking to people that don't necessarily agree with you, but there's a lot of common ground. There's a lot of things going wrong in Oregon. I mean, just like maybe have a conversation about the gas tax. Pretty sure everybody, regardless of your ethnicity and your political party, doesn't want to be taxed anymore. So unfortunately, it was maybe it's sad that this conversation couldn't have happened there, where some new people might have come in and shared their opinions, agree, disagree, but have a robust debate over some awesome tacos. And then they were saying, well, it was on Cinco de Mayo, and, you know, okay.
Yeah.
my gosh.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things. And of course, I'm not impressed with our local reporting to throw headlines out there that make one party look like they're evil and trying to invade is a very frustrating thing, when even within their own article, it just sounds like it was a simple scenario that things didn't work out the way they did. And it's not even really newsworthy, except that, one of the people involved is running for governor in the Republican primary.
Yeah. And again, my understanding from my friend who did go, that it was a great campaign. They ended up moving it a couple doors down. It's that 45th parallel. Mm-hmm. It's out on Hyacinth.
Yep.
There's a bunch of really great little shops and stuff in there. And again, it's a great venue. And I'm not with the people calling for, you know, a boycott of this place. Please don't do that. There's no reason to do that. And honestly, this was just a kind of a crummy situation all the way around. And I'm not down for that at all.
No. And you can have the grace and realize that, to a certain extent, like we said, the fire hose of hate got turned.
Yeah.
And especially a small local business restaurant in particular with very slim margins, the last thing they need is a massive fire hose of hate online coming after them. So, I'll have grace.
And honestly, yeah, there's no real rule book for how to deal with it when the big eye of Sauron is aimed at you. You're like, oh my God, I never wanted that to happen. So, but yeah, I'm with you on, with the local print. Mm-hmm. And it's really not print, but you know what I mean. Kind of a crummy way to deal with it. All right. What else? Gosh, there was so much.
What about this guilty verdict about Oregon rainwater?
See, I know. I was going there, too. It's so crazy. Well, we all know that, I guess, if it falls from the sky in most other sane places like red states, if it falls on the sky and it lands on your land, it's yours. Again, we're talking rain.
Well, I'm kind of, you know, I'm gonna flip to the other side, and I'm going, if I am stuck out in a torrential rain pour, I wish the government would come and collect their water off of me so I can stay dry.
I'm gonna sue for their
rainwater getting me wet. Come on.
So this is a TikTok video. Guilty verdict in Oregon. Rainwater falling on your own land doesn't actually belong to you. Gary Harrington built three reservoirs on his 170 acre property to collect rainwater and snowmelt for, get this, fire protection. Because you know how Oregon is just really great about fighting fires. The state demanded that he drain every drop, quote, all the water belongs to us. He refused. They hit him with 9 misdemeanors, jailed him for 30 days, fined him for more than $15,000. What?
So.
And there's a video here of the sentence being read. I mean, this is actual insanity.
Well, my first question would be is who, you know, when you're on, 170 acres, who is kicking and screaming that you're collecting any rainwater? Is this
how do they know? Are they sending drones over to see if you've got like a cistern or some totes that you've got a little catch on it? And oh my gosh!
Well, I'm going. Is it a ticked off neighbor? I mean, what's the scenario here that actually got him in trouble in the first place? But yeah, now I'm kind of nervous. You said the totes. I'm going. I might have a couple of old totes sitting on the side of my house that have collected some rainwater. I need to go dump those out this afternoon.
Yeah, because ignorance of collecting rainwater is no excuse, Hunter. If you don't know you're collecting it, it doesn't matter.
I guess I need to make sure my gutters are clear and everything else, because I don't want any excess rainwater.
But that's the thing. He's on 170 acres. It's probably wooded acres. Mm-hmm. He's doing what I would call the responsible thing. He's storing up water. I mean, I know a lot of people who do that. You get your totes. You have your water system, especially if you want to do a controlled burn. You've got a slag pile or something like that. You're going to use water to do that. Why not collect rainwater to do that? So many people, like I said, insane red states do that with no problem at all.
Especially here where, let's say he has a well. So it drains into the ground and ends up in his well eventually. I'm just going, I mean, that is a possible scenario.
I have heard, and I can't, okay, that there is, and especially because now what you're seeing the messaging now, and I'm seeing the maps, drought. We've got a drought coming. Beware. The Pacific Northwest, the Inland Northwest, you know, the sort of the Midwest, the Upper Northwest, the Rockies, it's drought, which means, that's a nice well that you've got there. My gosh. Really should, you know, share that well. Why do you need all that water for yourself? Why?
So I actually,
come on. Why do you want people to go thirsty?
I actually saw a report this morning on the Fox 12 talking about how if you actually look at, because they call the rainy season, the calendar actually starts in October. And so from October through now, we are actually on pace to have a relatively normally wet, even though it didn't feel that way.
The amount
of rain we've gotten is not too far off of our average. So I sit here and I kind of go, but yet every year we hear the drought conversation.
Yep.
And we know for a fact in places like Los Angeles where they let all the rainwater just run off into the ocean because they don't care. I'm going, I'm sure the same thing happens quite a bit here in Oregon. We don't do a good job of retaining our resources, especially water. So I kind of sit here and go, you know, so this guy is keeping water so that he can put a fire out if a wildfire were to get onto his property. But yet, you know, the state of Oregon, they're not going to be able to put those fires out effectively.
Right. And so to me, I think to most normal people, Norm and Norma, are going, well, that seems like an awfully responsible thing to do. He's paying for the infrastructure to do it. He's paying for the cistern or the tote or the, you know, the pumps or the solar or whatever it is he needs to make this a workable solution for him. But now he's being punished for that. I mean, it's just the Oregon way, I guess. It's maddening.
Well, Oregon needs their piece of every pie. And, you know, you'll be lucky to get the crumbs when they're all done with it.
Well, we're going to take a break, but I want to talk because there's also talk about AI. And what does AI use a lot of? Water.
What? No.
Yeah. Oregon is looking at, there could be a tech boom of AI in the state of Oregon, and they're going to need all that water. I wonder if there's some connection there. Gee, that's a nice well you've got there. Really? Do you need all of it? Because so anyway, let's come back and talk about that, because the water resources needed for this and the communities that are already dealing with it, it's pretty shocking. So you're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denison Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Cozy's New York Deli.
All right, everybody. Okay, so our friends over at RightNowOregon.com headline, Oregon AI boom could lift tech jobs while clerical roles shrink and state employment forecast show. This is a May 4th article. Oregon projects 140,000 new jobs by 2034, but AI is expected to boost demand in tech and analytics while slowing growth in clerical, customer service, and some creative roles. You really want to AI-proof your kids, man, as they're coming up. Because, you know, the admin assistant, somebody who is a numbers cruncher. Sadly, a lot of creative roles, customer service. You don't really need somebody behind a counter. You can have a cute little robot with big blinky eyes. You know?
What was the old Pepsi mascot back in the 80s? He's on the screen and... God, I'm trying to think of it now.
I can think of Michael Jackson.
like in Back to the Future, you know, he rolls up and they're the ones in the future. They're serving the drinks.
Yeah. The little robots, they have a lot of service robots all over the place. So, you know, this is a lot of people maybe a jobs boom. I don't know. Basically, you really need to AI proof yourself. I don't think you really want to be someone who says, well, I'm never going to use it. I use it. I'll admit, I have Grok and I have ChatGPT, and it makes a lot of things that I do that are very time sensitive and frankly math oriented. I let Grok do that for me. Thank you very much. But it takes a lot of energy and water.
What? No.
To run these things.
No,
yes,
it's all right there
water,
on your
Hunter.
But you do not dip your computer into the water or your phone into the water. You're actually simply told not to do that. How is all this technology using water?
Right? Am I supposed to rinse it off after I use Grok? What? No, so it's and a lot of them. I remember when I was down in Salt Lake City, Utah, back in like 2013, and one of the first big data centers had been built down there. And I'm pretty sure we drove by it, and it was huge. Mm-hmm. So you look at that. I mean, when you're thinking about what you're asking Grok to do, like I did a search on something. I was looking for milling supplies or whatever. So unlike Google, where it'll give you the list, Grok goes out and does all that. AI does all that for me. It puts it all together. It summarizes the best points. It gives me the links, and it does all of that in about a tenth of a second.
Yeah. Yep. And what we need to realize, and we're talking all these advancements in technology, and all this info is saved to the cloud. Well, the cloud is not something hovering overhead full of water. It is an actual brick and mortar building with all sorts of computers and technology inside of it. That gets very hot. I mean, heck, in this studio right here, over the course of an hour of this show, with the door closed because, soundproof,
right.
The temperature raises in here probably 5 to 10 degrees.
Yeah, you throw a couple bodies in there and then all the electronic equipment. And, of course, electronic equipment, as we know, needs to be kept cool.
Yep.
So air conditioning, it does that. So meanwhile, there's Zuckerberg is building one. They're coming up all over. There's a bunch of tweets out there now. There's one in Georgia. I've got one up here from Georgia. Americans who live next to the new AI data centers are seeing their power bills skyrocket. This is another thing. It takes a lot of power to do that. And a lot of people are making the argument, Meta and all these big companies, Google, Alphabet, whatever, they're huge resources, financial resources. They should be paying for their own. That should not be spread out to the community that has the misfortune, frankly, of living near a data center. She said they've seen their bills skyrocket by as much as 267% per month. AI data centers are also much less for electricity than many everyday people are paying much less. They get a better rate. Mm-hmm. This video that we've got up here, it follows a Google or a Georgia woman who is having to wear a ski suit to bed every night to keep from freezing. She's only living in parts of her home due to the high utility bills. I've got another one up here where these people, their water pressure has completely collapsed because pulling from the aquifers, pulling from the water and everything else, water pressure has collapsed, sinks don't run, toilets won't refill, homes shake nonstop, power outages are common. So this guy is saying a billionaire gets his servers and working families get steamrolled. And a lot of these people live rural because they bought their property mm-hmm. in a rural area thinking this is the American dream. And then this behemoth thing, and then just the building of it and the blasting of the ground. I mean, it's a nightmare for these people.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's one right here in, you know, why did they choose out in now I'm going to totally draw a blank on the city, out in eastern or central yeah. Oregon.
Prineville?
Yeah, Prineville has got a massive one of these. And yes, at the time, Prineville economy desperately needed the jobs affiliated right. with it. But at the same time, now a small former logging community is now a major meta epicenter with this giant resource sucker pulling resources. And it's pricing people out of what used to be an affordable community as a suburb of Bend in that area.
Well, and then to kind of go back to the right now, Oregon, just talking about the jobs that are going to be displaced, you've got, you know, secretarial jobs, you've got, you know, kind of blue collar jobs that you don't necessarily need a college degree to go to. And we talk again about sort of the dumbing down of the electorate and the state of education. A lot of the jobs that are coming in now, the ones that are especially going to be growing rapidly, data scientists increasing by 32.5%, computer and information research scientists, actuary, software developers. So the other side of that, do we have a workforce that's ready, an American workforce that's ready to come in and take over these jobs? Or are we dealing with, what is it, H-1B visas and bringing in foreigners to come do this? So there's many layers to why people are kind of upset. I have a little bit of agita about this.
Yeah, well, and I sit here and say, and they're telling all of us, you know, tear up your farmland and replace it with a solar panel farm. Why aren't these massive buildings covered with solar panels?
There
Wouldn't
you go.
That make a lot of sense? Oh, because that would generate actually more heat utilizing that. And I just go, you know, it's a vicious cycle. And like you said, is the residents are paying higher where the businesses are paying lower. Why? Because the businesses are actually only paying for their electricity. Right. Go down your electric bill right now. You're paying for subsidies for, you know, yes. windmills and umpteen other things that you know these businesses aren't paying for. So I just sit here and go, they tell us all these renewable energy sources like windmills and solar panels, but yet they're not putting those on top of these buildings out in the middle of nowhere.
And don't get me started on the windmills. I can't stand them. I can't stand them. Bird murderers. Yeah, you're right. So, you know, again, mom and pop and, you know, the Smith, Susie Smith and her parents are getting screwed on all of this. And then again, they've got workers again. And with the one, it's interesting. Reports are suggesting that adaptability, technical fluency and analytical skills may be increasingly valuable as AI shapes both white collar and blue collar. It's coming in for the creative side, too. A lot of people don't think that. But I mean, I could spend a ton of time putting together a really amazing graphic and it looks great. And then somebody can go over to Grok and put something together and you can all tell it. We all know what it looks like. Yep. When you see an AI generated flyer or something like that, they all have a similar look to them.
Well, we all know that. I mean, you talk about Hollywood in that stuff. We can all go find right now short films that are made fully through 100% through AI. How long until we see feature films that are 110% AI? And there's not a realistic person involved in creating these things.
We were talking about Spencer Pratt, who's running for LA mayor yesterday. He's got a new completely AI generated ad and it's kicking butt and it's effective as all get out. So, yeah, you don't want to be afraid of this. You want to learn how to use it. Get yourself an account. Go out there and learn how to use it. It has a lot of power. I mean, if it's going to take all the resources and everything else, you may as well, you know, figure out how to use it. You don't necessarily want to be left behind. I don't know if learning to code anymore isn't what they're going to tell people. Remember that?
Yeah.
Learn to code. Okay. Yeah. Nope.
Well, then
Grok can do that for you.
Then they simplified coding and, you know, came up with all sorts of platforms. And now, you know, every layman can throw something together. And then you add in AI and, oh, the world's moving at breakneck speeds.
HVAC, learn to fix things. Weld, learn to do all that. That's
plumbing,
where it's at.
Plumbing. Businesses, you know, they need the water.
yep. Amen. Amen. That's the way of the future. All right. We are out of time. We are just about out of time. All right, everybody, we have another great show planned for you. Go out, enjoy the day. We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.